Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on how one American political party has come to control the majority of state and national political offices. Republicans now control the U.S. House and Senate, 31 governorships, and 68 state House and Senate chambers.
Put the focus on finding and grooming great talent and promoting them at the state level and talking the issues that matter to people at state and local levels, you know, such as lower taxes. And these are things that have connected with people.
Is America becoming a one-party country? That is the subject of our program today. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America, and this is our daily program, As It Is. Barack Obama has won the last two presidential elections. Many Democrats believe Hillary Clinton can win if she campaigns in 2016. Even if she does win, the presidency would be one of the few offices Democrats would hold. Republicans now control a large majority of America's state and national offices, including most of the governor's offices, state legislatures, and the U.S. Congress. This has happened for many reasons. One of them is white voters. Many have been leaving the Democratic Party, especially in the Deep South. Another is Republicans have outspent and outworked Democrats at the local and state levels. The Deep South is an area that includes Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, and South Carolina. It also includes parts of five other states. They are Florida, Virginia, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Texas. In 1964, Democrats held or controlled almost all of the political offices in the Deep South. That was the same year that President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law. The measure gave legal protection to minorities. Experts believe the Civil Rights Act was the main reason for whites leaving the Democratic Party, giving control of the South to the Republicans. In the 2014 election, Democratic Representative John Barrow of Georgia lost to Republican Rick Allen. Mr. Barrow served in Congress for 10 years. He was the last white Democrat serving in the House from the Deep South. Late last year, Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu lost in her effort to get reelected. Republican Bill Cassidy won her Senate seat. His victory removed the only Democrat to hold statewide office in Louisiana, and the last Democratic senator to represent the Deep South. With the victories, Republicans now hold 54 of the 100-seat Senate chamber and 247 of the 435 U.S. House seats. The New York Times newspaper reports that in the Deep South, Republicans control not only every U.S. Senate seat, but also every governor's mansion and almost every state legislative body. the results are not better for Democrats in other parts of the country. There are Republican governors in 31 of the 50 states, including 7 of the 10 largest states. Only California, Pennsylvania, and New York have Democratic governors among the 10 largest states. Even in states where most voters are Democrats, Republicans are having success. In November, voters in 3 Democrat-majority states chose Republican governors. The 3 are Illinois, Maryland, and Massachusetts. The website Real Clear Politics reports that Republicans hold the governorship and both houses of the state legislature in 24 states. Democrats have that same level of control in only 7 states. Republicans also control 68 of 98 House and Senate chambers at the state level. In the elections last November, Republicans gained control of 11 state legislatures that had been held by Democrats. Ruffy Williams is a spokesman for the Republican National Committee. He says the party worked hard to find candidates and identify issues. Republicans, he says,
put the focus on finding and grooming great talent and promoting them at the state level and talking the issues that matter to people at state and local levels, you know, such as lower taxes. And these are things that have connected with people.
Guy Molyneux does public opinion surveys for Democratic activist groups. He admits Republicans have outworked Democrats at the state level.
I don't think Democrats have, in any sense, ignored the gubernatorial elections or state legislative elections, but I think it's probably a fair summary to say that the constituencies on the Democratic side have not focused as much or as well on those state races.
Republican control of state-level offices has also given them control of redistricting. State and national electoral districts are created in the states. Control of this process permits Republicans to create districts whose voters are more likely to vote for Republican state legislators as well as members of the U.S. House. For example, the new Pennsylvania 7th Congressional District includes parts of 5 different counties. The Republican-controlled legislature created the district with the help of a Republican governor. The shape of the district has been described as an oil spill, roadkill, or a crab. Critics say the district and others were drawn to protect Republican office holders. The news is not all bad for Democrats. Democrats get large majorities of the votes of African Americans and Hispanics. As the percentage of minority population grows larger than whites, Democrats hope to regain control of the country's politics. However, Guy Molyneux says Democrats know it will be very difficult to succeed without the support of white voters.
Democrats have by no means written off the white vote, and there are reasons that we have to be optimistic about improving our percentages there, but certainly in these off-year elections and in these state legislative races, we definitely need to do better.
On the Republican side, Ruffy Williams says the party has to reach out to minorities, something he says it has not done well in the past.
For a while there, we weren't engaging in minority communities as much as we should have been. Recently, we have been going to African-American, Hispanic, Asian, youth communities.
That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz at the VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. For hundreds of years, Africans have preserved their history through storytelling. But some Africans worry that oral traditions will be lost to internet connections and social media. This has led one Nigerian woman to create a mobile phone application, or app, as a way to preserve African folk stories. Elizabeth Kapurin is a businesswoman and fashion designer. She calls her mobile app AfroTales. The AfroTales app tells children's stories that teach moral lessons. Ms. Kapurin says she wanted to create the app to preserve some of the stories told to her when she was a child in Nigeria.
Sometimes you can't teach a child something by just telling the child, don't do this, don't do this. It, in fact, it gave me context. In a story, somebody stole something and then something bad happened to that person. Alternatively, somebody else did something good and the person ended up really happy or really rich.
Hello, children. My name is Liz and I would like to tell you a story about a tortoise, an elephant, and a hippopotamus.
The voice of Aunt Liz narrates the story, while a full-screen animation appears. An arrow signals when it is time to move on. There are also quizzes on object recognition and counting throughout.
Can you point at Mr. Elephant? No, try again. Good! Find the rope. Try again.
Kapurin spoke to her older relatives to help collect stories for the application. The stories come from an ethnic group of about 4 million people called the Tiv, who live in southeast Nigeria and northwest Cameroon. Ms. Kapurin says she wants to include folk tales from other parts of Nigeria in local languages in those areas.
I want to keep it centered around folk stories. I don't want popular stories like, let's say, the ones that Walt Disney has made really, really popular. I think it's only fair and respectful that we keep certain cultures alive because most of these folk stories are part of the tapestry that keeps cultures together.
Kapurin writes and reads the stories. Her business partner and husband, Adamebi Elomina Eremi, does the animation. AfroTales is available for Android users and can be downloaded for free in the Google Play Store. So far, AfroTales has more than 50,000 users. Funding for the app has been a major challenge. Ms. Kapurin hopes to use a crowdfunding campaign to help fund the next version of AfroTales to be released this year. Ms. Kapurin says technology does not have to destroy or replace traditions. She says her goal is to combine both new technology and old traditions to keep African culture alive.
Africa is our home. I think we are so in a rush to become Western that we're forgetting things that are really, really important, things that should be part of who we are. And I don't think that's right.
I'm Jonathan Evans.
¶¶ welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. President Ulysses Grant served two terms in office. His administration was marked by corruption. The president himself was not linked directly to any of the incidents, but he was friends with dishonest members of the cabinet and Congress. This week in our series, Jack Weitzel and Tony Riggs tell how Grant's problems affected the Republican Party in the presidential election of 1876.
The American people were very disappointed with President Grant. He was the military hero of the Civil War. He had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South. His popularity dropped, however, during his presidency. Grant was not an effective political leader, nor was he able to control the men around him. The American people also were worried about the nation's economic situation. A serious depression had begun during Grant's second term. Many people were out of work. They blamed the ruling Republican Party.
The state and congressional elections of 1874 were an important turning point. Republicans were shocked by the results. For the first time in 18 years, the Democratic Party won control of the House of Representatives. They won 169 seats. The Republicans won 109. Democrats also won control of 23 of the 35 state governments. These included several northern states where people were tired of Republican rule.
Important changes also were made in the South. Democrats won control of southern state governments from radical Republicans. One of these states was Mississippi. White Democrats there began organizing groups called White Leagues. These groups wanted to prevent blacks from voting for radical Republicans. They started riots in which many blacks were killed. They also used economic power against blacks. These efforts succeeded. Most blacks were too afraid to vote. The Democrats took control of both the Mississippi legislature and the governor's office. Similar actions with similar results took place in other southern states.
As Grant's second term came to an end, he began to talk about the possibility of another 4 years in the White House. Republican politicians were firmly opposed. They blamed Grant for the party's defeats in state and congressional elections. Grant had to give up any hope of a third term. Congressman James Blaine seemed to have the best chance of winning the Republican presidential nomination in 1876. Blaine had been Speaker of the House of Representatives when the Republicans controlled Congress. He was powerful, and he had many supporters. Some Republican leaders, however, questioned his honesty. Blaine fought this criticism with an emotional speech in Congress.
When the Republican Party convention opened in Cincinnati, Ohio, Blaine was the leading candidate for the presidential nomination. He expected to win the first day.
There was a wild demonstration of support when his name was put before the convention. But before the voting could begin, the lights went out. Some delegates believed Blaine's opponents were responsible. These opponents worked all night to get other delegates to change their support from Blaine to another candidate. When the delegates voted the next morning, Blaine did not have enough votes to win the nomination.
However, after six ballots, Blaine appeared ready to win. To stop him, his opponents needed to unite behind another candidate. One of these candidates was Rutherford Hayes, the governor of Ohio. Hayes had fewer enemies than the other candidates, so he became the compromise candidate for delegates hoping to stop Blaine. On the seventh ballot of the convention, Rutherford Hayes captured the Republican nomination.
The Democratic Party met in St. Louis, Missouri. Delegates nominated Samuel Tilden, the governor of New York. Tilden had led the fight to end dishonesty in government in New York State. He had ousted a group called the Tweed Ring, which controlled New York City politics for years. Democrats said he was the man to end dishonesty in government in Washington. Republicans campaigned by denouncing the Democratic Party. They called it the party of Southern rebellion and treason. Instead, they said, vote for the Republican Party, the party that had saved the Union. Democrats campaigned by attacking Republican dishonesty. They blamed Republicans for the nation's economic problems, and they promised better times for everyone if their candidate was elected.
The presidential election of 1876 was very close. By midnight of election day, the results seemed to show that Democrat Samuel Tilden was the winner. Republican Rutherford Hayes went to bed believing he had lost. However, the Republicans quickly saw that the electoral votes of three southern states could decide the winner. In the American presidential system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, the electoral votes of three states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina, were enough to give the White House to one candidate or the other.
Each party claimed victory in these three states. Each accused the other of stealing votes and counting ballots unfairly. Finally, the two parties agreed to form an electoral committee to decide who had won the disputed votes. The committee was supposed to include seven Republicans, seven Democrats, and one independent. But before it could meet, the independent member resigned. A Republican took his place. The Republicans had a majority.
The committee first debated the disputed votes of Florida. After much discussion, the eight Republicans on the committee voted to accept the votes of Florida's Republican electors. they rejected a proposal to investigate the way the votes were counted in the state. They said there was not enough time for a full investigation. The same thing happened with the disputed votes of Louisiana and South Carolina. The Republicans on the committee voted to count the Republican electors. The Democrats voted to count the Democratic electors. In each case, the Republicans won by a vote of 8-7.
As a result, Rutherford Hayes gained the electoral votes of all three states. This gave him enough to win the election. Democrats were furious. Democrats in many states began organizing party militia groups. They said they would fight, if necessary, to prevent the Republicans from stealing the presidency. The situation seemed very tense and dangerous. Many feared the start of another civil war. Negotiations finally provided a peaceful solution.
Representatives of the two parties met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to permit Republican Rutherford Hayes to be sworn in as president. In return, Hayes agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners.
Hayes' opponent, Democrat Samuel Tilden, did not oppose the agreement. Tilden was an old man. His health was poor. He agreed that 4 years of Rutherford Hayes would be better than 4 years of civil war. So it was that Rutherford Hayes became the 19th president of the United States. He would surprise a lot of people after he reached the White House. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Jack Weitzel and Tony Riggs. Our programs can be found online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and historical images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.